The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
Excellent, Simon. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I got called in. Ready to go. I was in the bullpen. Matt Wood came out, showed the you know, bring in the righty. So I got the call, made my way up from Laval, and here I am. So happy to be here. Okay, so Pierre, Canadiens winners back-to-back on the weekend, but what I liked about it is that they called up Nikita Sherbeck from Laval. I've taken in a couple of Laval games, and I've actually taken in the last two Laval games, and he clearly looked like the better of the AHL players out there. He clearly looked like he was head and shoulders above the Syracuse Crunch, and I believe the Manitoba Moose were the other team. So they bring him up here, but what I love about this, I love the fact that they brought him up and they put him on a line with Jonathan Drouin and Alex Galchenyuk, and they didn't try to squeeze him into the lineup on a fourth line or squeeze him into the lineup on a third line. It looks like they brought him up, they played him, and they're playing to his strength, which is the offensive upside they're hoping for.
Well, your points are all perfectly well taken and right on the mark. That's exactly what you're supposed to do with young players. If you got a checker that you're bringing up, make him a checker. Noel Achari is a good example of that. They don't play him with Patrice Bergeron in Boston, or Tim Schaller. They don't play him with David Krejci. They play him on a checking line with Sean Corrali. So when they call guys up, that's usually where they go, unless they're offensive players. And then, like Anders Bjork, before he got hurt, Anders Bjork comes up from the American Hockey League. He's playing on a line with Patrice Bergeron. Austin Zarnik comes up from the American Hockey League, and they put him on the power play. They play to his strength. So you're 100% right on. Good for Claude Julien. Good for the Montreal Canadiens management team. That's what you're supposed to do with kids that are coming up. Put them in roles where they're going to survive and thrive.
And what is the biggest adjustment? You know, there was a moment...
The NHL?
Well, there was a point that, you know, Alex Galchenyuk afterwards, when he caught up with members of the media, his first shift...
Here, Simon.
Oh, you got it?
Go ahead. Here you go.
I think first shift, last game, you know, I had kind of a bad turnover, and I can tell he was rushing a little bit, and at the start, and I told him, you know, calm down. You know, I know what you can do. And, you know, putting up numbers, he was in the AHL, you got to be doing something good. And so use the same confidence, play the same way, and take that extra second, because it is here. Obviously, the NHL is faster, but there's still that extra seconds when you can, you know, hold on to the puck and make a great play. And I think when you calm down, you start playing his game, and it made a difference.
So it's not only that the speed, Pierre, but it's that closing speed that guys come down on you so quickly.
Well, you have to have peripheral vision. You have to know where you're being attacked from. You have to know where your outlets are, but you can't be afraid to make plays. That's one of the things that makes him a good player. He is a guy that's comfortable with the puck, and he can make plays. So that's a positive. It's really positive. That's great advice from Galchenyuk, by the way. Really, really strong, and obviously somebody that's gone through it. But that's the biggest thing. You know, I saw one of my former players this past weekend coaching a game, Sean McEachran, who was a really good player when he came into the NHL and a very consistent player. And he was a phenomenal goal scorer in college hockey at BU. And we were talking about, you know, different levels of play. And that's the number one thing guys have to learn when they make the transition from whether it's major junior hockey or from the American Hockey League or from college hockey, is making sure that you're consistently good when you make decisions with the puck. That's the biggest thing.
Just speaking of consistency, Jeff Petry is a player that has moments that, you know, may be the best Canadian player this weekend. And there's other nights where there's an incredible struggle out there. But Pierre, what is it that he plays so well when Shea Weber is not in the lineup? There can't be a connection there, but is it just more minutes, or maybe wants to be put in more in a position that he can carry the puck a little bit more, which allows him to, you know, get more minutes out there?
I don't know if there's a scientific answer to it, but there's definitely, I would say there's something to the fact that he wants to probably try to do more, and he is trying to do more, and he's been, I think, much more of an effective player because of it. But again, you see the defensive shortcomings too. So you got to kind of trade them off and understand, if you're a player, you have to sense danger. You have to sense risk. You have to know when to take a risk and when, you know what, this is dangerous, I got to back off. You have to sense those things, especially when you're managing the clock. So that's one of the things he needs to get better at. But there's definitely, you can see Jeff is much more comfortable when he's trying to make things happen with the puck.
And Anthony Emme gets a pair on Sunday, so bring his total up to four, all four goals scored against the Ottawa Senators. But Pierre, from a coaching perspective, when you have a young player like that and he goes 20 games or so without a goal, do you talk to him? Do you let it be? Do you let him play out of it? How do you put him at ease that he's playing well, but he's just not scoring? And how do you try to get him to find the back of the net?
I don't think that was why they brought Lehkonen into the league. I think the biggest thing with him is just being a reliable two-way player, and they'll take whatever offense they can get from him. But the biggest thing for him is to try to be a plus player, not to be a negative drain on the team in terms of giving up opportunities to the opposition. The fact that he provided some offense for them, especially on Sunday, was huge in their win over Ottawa. There's no question about that. Probably for him, with younger players, again, don't pass up shots. Move your feet when you are attacking the offensive blue line. And try to, if you don't have the puck, get open. And he was able to do that on the brilliant pass from Plekanec. I thought he did a really good job finding a dead spot in coverage and then eventually taking advantage of that brilliant pass by Plekanec and putting it home.
You know, there was a lot of expectations for Lehkonen going into the season, Pierre. He's so smart away from the puck. He does so many great things. He scored 18 goals last season. And you know, the injury set him back a little bit, and it's been more challenging in his sophomore year. How do you see him long term? Is he a legit top six, or on a good team is he better suited maybe in a third line role?
I see him, if he's on an elite team, and I mean I'm talking about a team that's got a chance to win a division and win a cup, I could see him being, you know, a top nine forward, but probably closer to 7, 8, or 9 than he would be to 4, 5, or 6. I don't see him as a top three forward for your team. I don't think anybody in the Canadian sees him that way. But again, you just talked about it, Mitch Gallen. I think really appropriately so. The truth is that he did have 18 goals last year, so that nobody can ever take those away from him. But I'm not sure that's where they thought his career was going to trend to. I think he's trending more towards being a really reliable two-way player.
Now, we finally saw some success on the power play over the weekend, and it's a team effort. It's not about one player, but you guys, you and Simon, talked a lot about Jeff Petrie, and he was a big part of that success, especially without Weber. But can some collective, like 5 goals over 2 games, can that restore some sense of belief that might be able to carry into the rest of the season?
Well, you hope so. You don't know that for sure, but you sure hope so, Rod. You know, again, those were two good wins. Fans left the building feeling really good about, you know, the viewing that they saw, which was great. I don't think the game started on Saturday the way they wanted it to, and Anthony Emmy was a huge difference maker in that game. But I would say that one of the positives you take out of it is the fact that the power play was as effective as it was. Obviously, there was a 5-on-3 opportunity yesterday, which was, you know, pretty positive for them. But I would say more than anything else, you've got to get the power play going. We've talked about that ad nauseum because they don't score a lot 5-on-5.
Yeah, now 7th in the league on the power play, and we're looking for the things that are different, Pierre. And I can't help but wonder about the stress factor and the pressure factor being lifted from this group and seeing results on the weekend when the emphasis on winning is actually a little bit less than it was when they were still fighting for a spot. If scouts are looking at the Montreal Canadiens and they see players performing in this environment that weren't at the beginning of the year, how do you figure out if it's because they're playing easy breezy or it's because they actually just were slumping at the beginning?
Well, you'll see because of the consistency with certain players, especially if you're tracking a guy. So if you're a pro scout and you have an assignment, track Montreal, and let's say for the sake of argument, you're tracking scoring wingers. So you're evaluating, you say, well, he's been very consistent. He hasn't been very consistent. He's made great decisions with the puck. So if you track, let's say, a 10 to 15-day period, you'll have a pretty good idea of actually who's not playing soft and footloose and the other guys that are playing hard and wanting to compete. You'll have a pretty good idea, but that's how you do it. That's how you track it. I would say more than anything, the biggest thing with those guys that you're talking about, the potential tradable players from Montreal, is that I think most of them really want to be Montreal Canadiens. I truly believe that. I don't think there are a lot of guys. They get treated unbelievably well. I know the media is pretty hard, and I know the fans can be hard. If you want to be a pro hockey player, it's not a bad place to play, you know. It's a really darn good place to play, especially when you're winning.
Well, I would imagine Antti Niemi is enjoying it. Pierre, you saw at the beginning of the year, I caught one game that he was in a, I believe it was a Penguins uniform, and he was terrible, and just he's bounced back and he's played quite well. And considering I don't think the Canadians are blessed with a great blue line, it's quite impressive.
Well, I think part of it is a relationship that he has with Stefan Waite. You know, he and Stefan were together in Chicago in 2010 when they won the Cup, and then I think to Montreal's credit, they hired Stefan Waite from Chicago. He's a tremendous administrator of goalies and a really good coach when it comes to that. And I think that helped Antti Niemi a lot, just watching. But it hasn't been an easy year. It hasn't been an easy last 3 or 4 years for him, to be quite frank. So this is probably fun for him. And it's more of a hockey environment. Let's look at it. Pittsburgh hockey environment. Dallas, up and down. San Jose, up and down. Florida, up and down. In terms of hockey environment, you go to Montreal, you better be ready for a hockey environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Pierre, Victor Mete on Saturday night played about 13 minutes. Just at this stage of this young man's career, without Shea Weber in the lineup, and I only say that because maybe you can put him out there with Weber, and Weber, you know, handles his business in his end of the rink. But how do you like the progression thus far, ever since he's come back from the World Juniors?
Well, I think it's been hard on everybody to play in the World Junior. I just spoke at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, so that's not the NHL, but it's Division I big-time college hockey. It's in Hockey East, and Cale Makar, who was a tremendously important player, much like Victor Mete was for Team Canada at the World Junior. Cale Makar is not nearly as good now as he was before the World Junior, and I think most of the players that have gone through that World Junior, especially this year because of the outdoor game, which is ridiculous that they did that, and I can tell you, just talking to people that have gone through it, they were not the same afterwards. They were not, especially with the conditions they played through. So you got to understand, there's going to be a point with all these guys that played in that tournament, they're going to take a step back. In terms of the minutes, the fact he's playing over 10, I think, is important. Anything over 10 is good for him at this point.
Simon Tsimikas in for Mitch Malick this Malick in the afternoon on TSN 690. We're in conversation with Pierre Maguire, NBC hockey analyst. And don't forget, right after the 5:30 update, we're giving away a pair of tickets and the fantastic trip to watch the Habs in Vegas with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo.
Pierre, I asked this question thinking, in years past, to guys like Sven Andraghetto and Christian Thomas and the guys on the roster right now, like Jacob De La Rose and more specifically Daniel Carr, how do you make a decision on a player that you know he's not going to be part of your team, but you feel like he deserves a chance to play in the NHL? You know he's not in your plans, but you don't also want to just give up an asset for nothing. How do you make that decision? Because Daniel Carr is 26 years old. He has 10 points in 17 games, but they're not playing him. I don't think it's fair to have a guy like that as a healthy scratch. You know what
I
mean?
No, it's not. That's another good point, too. That's where you find out about the humanity of the people making the decisions. I think eventually they'll figure it out. I do. I really believe that. He's a useful depth player in an organization. He might even be a little bit more than that, depending on the organization that he's playing in. I would say that there's an opportunity that maybe some teams that are looking to add character and maybe add a little bit of grit might come to the Canes at the trade deadline and say, hey, what are you doing with Carr? Maybe we can talk about a third round or a fourth round pick or something like that, or maybe we can trade prospect for prospect. Maybe there's a need that you have potentially in Laval, maybe on defense even, where we can address that, and we want to add him, so we'll make that deal. So I would say that as we get closer to the deadline, there's a potential for a player like that, and I've seen it many times over the years where a player like that is moved.
So further to that, if as an organization you've made up your mind that for whatever reason you feel player X, in this case Carr, has gone as far as he can in your team, do you let him know that you're going to try to move him, or do you set false expectations if you do that?
No, I would never do that unless the agent comes in and really causes trouble. And then you say, listen, we're doing our best. I give you permission to go out and try to make a deal, but we're trying our best to try to accommodate you. We like the kid a lot, but right now there's no spot for him. So we're trying to help you out here and make a deal. But if the agent becomes really pugnacious and problematic, especially in the media, then you deal with it and say, you know what, we're trying our best, but if you think you can do better, go out and make a deal. And we'll let everybody know, by the way, that we've given you permission to make that deal. You'd be amazed at how many guys back off when you say that because they don't want to look bad in the public.
Pierre, just want to bounce around the National Hockey League here. Vasilevskiy has been brilliant for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but this steady climb by the Boston Bruins, of course, The press always goes to that top line. Bergeron's been brilliant, Pasternak and Bergeron, but very quietly, Tuukka Rask here down the stretch has been an absolute beast.
Yeah, Tuukka's been good. I mean, I watched their game with Toronto the other night. It was man for playing with boys the other night. Toronto just wasn't ready for the intensity of that game, and obviously Boston was. I would say the biggest thing, though, I watched Boston play St. Louis, too. That was not really friendly to St. Louis, even though the score was. Boston's got it going on, and the biggest thing they've got going is their young guys continually push the pace of the game. I talked about the fourth line with you before, especially Corrali and Schaller right now. They bring up Austin Zarnik. He gets points. You look at McAvoy coming back, what he's done with Chara. You look at Brandon Carlo's development. You look at Grizzlick and McQuaid, and that's 5-6. McQuaid and Grizzlick are your 5-6 pairing. You know, that's pretty good. So they're deep at all positions. They really defend well. They dominate the puck, so it's hard for the opposition to get quality chances. They wear the other team's top players out because they can create matchup situations. Krejci's playing great. So that gives them the dynamic 1-2 punch down the middle with Bergeron and Krejci. They're really a tough, tough team. They might get proactive at the trade deadline, too, because they got a gazillion prospects. And so I could see them potentially adding a live fire second line score. And if they do that, look out.
Man, oh man, Pierre, I watched that game Saturday. And, you know, Marchand wasn't even in the mix in that
Correct.
Game. And Toronto didn't have any time with the puck.
Nope.
Anytime a Leaf player had the puck, time and space, gone. Zapped
Correct.
Right away.
Did you know that Austin Matthews played in that game?
Well, he was kind of invisible, but.
Correct. They took him right out of the game. They took him right out of the game. He was nowhere. And it's not on him. Listen, he's a young guy. He'll figure it out eventually. Yeah. But that's how good Boston can be and how well they played that night.
You think Tampa Bay is now looking over their shoulders, and does that create a little bit of pressure on them to add something to their team?
I think they're going to do something anyways. I really think they like their team a lot. They should. They're a really good team. One of the things that I think they have that Boston's just figuring out is guys like Girardi and Kunitz and Callahan, older players that have been really successful. One guy's won the Cup, you know, four times, talking about Kunitz, once in Anaheim and three times in Pittsburgh. The other guys haven't. They've been close, Callahan and Girardi in particular. They haven't won yet, though. And so I think those, when you have those guys around, that helps. Boston doesn't have a lot of those old guys around, so it's mostly their young guys. So I think that'll be the interesting test. I think the old guys can kind of get through a playoff series that's tight because they've been there. I don't know if the young guys are ready to do that yet. We'll see.
Pierre, over 100 million people tuned into your station yesterday to watch Super Bowl 52. Nick Foles, I guess like when you go around the States or Canada, Pierre, and you talk to young players about, you know, just being, as Bill Belichick says, the next man up, even though he wasn't a Belichick guy, what an absolutely great story.
Well, it's amazing when you consider Drew Brees came out of the same high school, Westlake High School in Texas, and he broke all of Drew Brees' records, and Brees was... Everybody to this day says, how did he get out of the state of Texas? He ended up playing at Purdue. How did Foles get out of the state of Texas? Everybody knew that he broke Drew Brees' records and he was better than Brees, but yet everybody complained. How did Texas or Texas Tech or TCU or SMU or any of those teams not take him? University of Houston? Well, Nick Foles went to Arizona State. You know, so how did that happen? It's a great story. I'm really happy for him. I'm happy for, even though I'm a Giants fan, you never cheer for the Eagles.
Yep.
It's kind of neat that they finally won a Super Bowl, considering how tight they and how close they've been. I loved the game. I thought the game was great. I was shocked that the Patriots couldn't get one stop, whether it was on fourth down or whether it was on third down. They didn't get any stops at all.
Nothing.
It was crazy.
And you're right about that. We spoke about it off the top, how great of a football game that was. That was like a heavyweight bout, just punch for punch, right out of the gate.
Everybody's ripping Brady. Brady played pretty darn well. Anytime you put up that many points in a Super Bowl, more chances than not you're going to win. They just couldn't get a stop. And I got to think Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia are wondering about why they didn't play Malcolm Butler. I have no idea what the story is. I've heard all the speculation. I don't know whether what's true and not true, but I got to think that guy would have helped them. I got to think.
On one third down, that's all you needed. Yeah, on one stop and one third down.
It's crazy. And if he had done something untoward, like why put him on the sideline? Why dress him? Why not just deactivate him?
Well, did you see how emotional he was?
He was crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was crying.
My
everybody.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. I mean, that's a guy that cared, obviously. I just don't know what happened there, but obviously they played him on special team situations. It was just, I thought it was surreal, especially when you look at the flea flickers and Brady not catching his and Foles catching his. I mean, that was unbelievable. I've never seen two of those in one game, one by either team, and one of them successful and one not. That was crazy.
No, great game, great ending. Thank you, Pierre. Always a pleasure.
Simon, nice talking with you. Rod, Mitch, great talking to you, gentlemen. Have a great night, everybody.
Pierre McGuire, NBC hockey analyst. It was a great game yesterday. And the champion sitting across me. Can you get a tattoo or anything? No, you're not.
No.
Rod? No. Bills championship? How about a four-peat? A four-peat.
Oh, oh well. You know, Simo, if that happens,
yes.
I'm down. Otherwise, my skin's too pretty.
Yeah, that's it. No, it's tough. It's last forever, man. You should get one, though, Gallo. I think you should get, like, your entire back Nick Foles. No, not going to happen?
No.
Gallo with an update, and then we're giving away that wonderful prize, two tickets to Las Vegas, courtesy of Air Canada Rouge. Two nights in Vegas and spending money on the strip, and of course, watching the Habs versus the Golden Knights.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Energy.